This is a Triple J podcast.
G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for the Summer Hack Podcast and Happy New Year. Welcome to 2026, our first podcast for this year. How are you feeling? You're a bit dusty, maybe? Potentially. It's been a big few weeks. Obviously, this time of year, a lot of people are indulging a little bit more in alcohol than they normally would. And it's also this time of year that people are maybe taking stock, reflecting, setting some New Year's resolutions and saying, oh, I might have a break soon. It's all been a bit much over the past month or so, because definitely alcohol and consumption of alcohol can have some big impacts on our health, but also on our bank balance, finances. It's an expensive thing to do. All those cocktails, beers add up. The anxiety around it can be real as well. And I don't mean to add to all of that, but if you are thinking about giving up alcohol, why do you want to do it? For some people, it is just a little bit of a pause, just to feel fresher for a tiny amount of time. Maybe that's Dry July, October. You really like to time it around those fundraising events, and maybe you make it a thing with your friends. For other people, though, it's a bit more serious. They've got an addiction to alcohol and they're on a journey towards sobriety. So how do you know if you fit into that category, if you're drinking too much, if you are addicted to alcohol? Well, I'm going to dive into this now with my guest, Julia Rangihaua. She's the host of a podcast called Soberly Speaking, and we chatted last year about her journey and what she's hoping to achieve by speaking to so many people about their sober journeys themselves. Here's my chat with Julia. Julia Rangihaua, welcome to Hack.
Thank you so much for having me. An amazing pronunciation. Thank you for trying.
I'm trying, and it's so good to have a chat with you because I know how popular your podcast is. And I know that because I saw so many of my own friends follow you and follow your journey. How long have you been alcohol free, Julia?
Oh, so 3 years in January.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's weird. You start counting months like when you have a newborn baby. People start saying 18 months, 19 months.
And so your alcohol relationship, I'm imagining, started pretty young, like a lot of people in this country. When did you first pick up alcohol and start to use it a lot?
Yeah, probably year eight is my first memory of putting all our money together, trying to buy cruisers or passion fruit UDLs or passion pop. That's when we started, you know, experimenting with boys and everything. And that first year of high school, I was so desperate to fit in.
Did you feel alcohol gave you something that you were craving in normal life?
1,000%. So, well, I'm Māori and I was a lot more tan back then growing up by the beach in Perth. So a predominantly white suburb. I was a foot taller than everyone else and quite overweight. Alcohol allowed me to become this silly version of myself that I really wasn't. And I actually don't think I'm a naturally silly person. I think I'm quite funny, but I'm not a loose, free spirit. I'm very measured and I'm very serious. And no one wants that friend as a teenager, you know. You want the girl who's going to drink and do cartwheels. You want the girl who's going to drink and just take her clothes off and run across the oval. So that's the person I try to become.
When did you realize that your relationship with alcohol had maybe changed and what had been a lot of fun in your teen years was becoming a lot more serious?
Definitely after high school, it felt like everyone really knew what they wanted to do with their lives. Everyone was studying, working somewhere. I was kind of just working all of these weird, odd jobs. The only thing I thrived in was drinking and keeping the bender going. So when everyone was like, all right, it's Monday now, we're going to stop drinking, I always wanted to say, you know, well, what about Cheeky Tuesdays at this pub? What about Wednesday's trivia? We have to drink, we have to drink. And I could hear myself saying these words. And that's when I sort of put two and two together, like, oh, this might have a hold on me.
How do you reckon that was received by your friends at the time? Were people into it and they were following you to Cheeky Tuesdays, or were they pulling you aside and saying, Julia, what's
no,
going on?
No one was pulling me aside. I mean, I'm 32 now, so it was a very different time back then. I was, let's say if I was going to Cheeky Tuesdays with you, you were my Cheeky Tuesday friend, right? And then I'd be hitting up Steph and we'd be doing Wednesdays together. So I was that token person for everyone. But for me, I was going out, you know, almost every night of the week.
So your friendships were built around drinking and
totally
your drinking schedule. What was your life looking like at the worst of your alcohol addiction, Julia? Like when you look back at your life then?
There's that saying, death by a thousand paper cuts. And it wasn't necessarily that I passed out and the kitchen burnt down. I actually wish that had happened to me. I wish I received a real rock bottom like that, because I kind of moved through the world in that grey area for so many years of my life. So, you know, every time I drank, which was every second day or night, I was screaming at my partner down Oxford Street. I was in debt. I was living in a mold infested share house. The job I had, I was getting put on 2 to 3 days a week. I really couldn't afford to live, right? But it was never alcohol's fault. It was, I might quit sugar, or I'm going to change gyms. I was doing everything else but tackling that elephant in the room.
And the financial impact.
Oh my gosh, Dave.
Yeah. I mean, like physically, I mean, we'll get to all of that and how you were feeling health-wise. But financially, I imagine you were taking a bit of a beating.
I mean, I was, let's say I was making, and I'm not even joking, probably about $600 to $800 a week. My rent cost $370, and then I was putting $200 towards alcohol. So I was really living off kind of a hope and a prayer at that time. $200 over the course of about 13 years, I think I've estimated, and this is really underselling it, right? $200 okay. is 10 cocktails in Sydney. If you want to give yourself nightmares, calculate how much you would have spent on alcohol.
Oh.
I'm not taking into consideration bags or anything. It's about 150K.
And that's so much money.
I've estimated with bags, it would be over 200K. And that's before the drunken Ubers. That's before the drunken fast food. That's before the entry fees, like the festival tickets, everything that came with drinking and taking drugs.
Yeah, there's a lot of flow-on stuff that, you know, drinking leads to. I mean, you mentioned bags. What was the relationship with drugs like?
Oh, I loved drugs just as much as alcohol. It just wasn't something I was hooked to. And I actually think it's because I couldn't afford them all of the time. I loved the way they made me feel. I started taking MDMA in year 10. So I was quite an early bloomer. The festival scene was huge. It was very ecstasy heavy in my early 20s. And then when I got to mid 20s, when I could start to afford it or go halves with someone, it was cocaine. And every time I was drinking, we were doing a bag. You know, I would take a sip of white wine and straight away it was, are we getting a bag? Are we getting a bag? Are we getting a bag? Which I don't think is uncommon, especially in a city like Sydney.
It's interesting you talk about alcohol and drugs. We spoke with Alex, another person who struggled with both alcohol and drug addiction during his 20s, and he's on this pathway of sobriety now. And he said, even though he was at one time deeply addicted to meth, he actually thought the alcohol addiction was worse, because it was just so socially acceptable.
Yeah, if I said, oh, I don't think I'm going to drink tonight, straight away it was, what's wrong? What's going on with you? But you have to drink. It's my birthday. It's Amy's hens. There was always something I had to drink for. I mean, look, I said that very, very rarely, but it was so socially acceptable. Even the jobs that I did have, it was like, how are we going to celebrate? Oh, we're going to pop champagne. We're going to go out. Celebration and alcohol is tied so closely together in this country. I honestly don't think we're able to do it like one without the other.
When were you on Big Brother?
2022.
And how did that link into all of this in your lifestyle at that time?
Yeah, so I actually catfished the producers of Big Brother. So when they reached out to me, I was doing an old podcast. It was about sex and drugs, really, and heavily on the drugs and being the party girl. They got me through to the final round. I then went into the house and they stripped me of all my vices, right? We were allowed like one drink if someone got evicted, which was about like once a week. And I quickly realized I was so not the person who I thought I was. I was such bad TV. I just didn't speak. I didn't really speak. I was incredibly empathetic and measured, and I was incredibly stable and grounded. I always thought I was this crazy character.
Erratic person.
And I wasn't.
Yeah.
It was the alcohol.
So was that the turning point for you when you realized when you were without alcohol that you liked all of these other qualities about yourself?
Unfortunately not. If anything, it made me go the other way, because I thought, oh, but I love the character that I've built. And that's what I call her. I call her the character that I built throughout those years of me drinking. We could go to breakfast and I could turn it into this crazy adventure where I'd end up in all these mimosas and dance on the table and families would be appalled. I loved that about myself. Mm. I didn't like many qualities of my sober version. So it was about, must have been about 6 months after that where I finally decided to go sober after 6 month bender.
Everyone has that feeling of anxiety that comes like the day after or a couple of days after a big bender. Was that just constant for you?
Yeah, I actually had no idea that I was permanently living with anxiety because I just keep drinking. you know, you wake up. If I had the shakes, I would go to the Lord Gladdy and just have a champagne or have a few drinks, maybe call my friend who I knew had a bag that would set me straight. I mean, it sounds crazy now, but I thought, oh, if I have work on Monday, I need to get straight. Let me just have a couple of champagnes, maybe a line, and I'll be okay. Like, that was my remedy to stop being hungover.
How hard was it to realize you were addicted? Was that a process?
I had no idea I was addicted to alcohol until I tried to stop drinking.
And that's because you were getting withdrawal symptoms,
correct,
cravings.
Correct. I had the cold sweats. You have this intense fog. It's like there's a sheet between you and reality. It's like everything's in slow motion. I was so tired. Your energy is completely zapped for like 11 weeks. Your memory is terrible. Even to this day, I feel like my memory will kind of never repair, which is really sad. Mm. Insomnia. Yeah, I was shocked. I thought, oh my God, I might be an alcoholic.
And how difficult was the decision to decide that you needed to give up alcohol for good? Did it start like that, or were you initially like, I'll just stop for a little while?
Oh, it was never for good. That still to this day scares me, that word forever.
Yeah.
I don't recommend that anyone goes into sobriety with this has to be forever, because you're never going to do it.
Yeah.
Fuck no. So I went into it with my partner. I remember it was January 2nd, 2023. And, you know, on the 31st of December of the year prior, I thought, this year is going to be different. I'm going to change my life this year. Yet I had started it exactly like every other year on a 2-day bender. The bank account is gone. Me and my partner fighting. And I remember just looking in the mirror, brushing my hair. I was getting ready for a family lunch, already drinking, of course. And I thought, damn, what could my life look like if I wasn't constantly hungover? Let me just do a year and be absolutely insane. And let's just see what happens. And hey, if nothing happens, I'll just go back to doing exactly what I'm doing. But within about 2 weeks, my life got so much better.
And you noticed it straight away?
Apart from the physical withdrawals, which I was like, damn, I thought I would just wake up with like a 6-pack and be about this big and flip out of bed. If anything, you put on weight because you eat a lot of sugar. I had terrible skin, but you have to like see the vision. But
how long is that process?
For me, it was 12 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why I always get a bit, you know, I always kind of roll my eyes when people go, I'm going to give up alcohol for 1 month. And although I love the sentiment, you're going to see no health benefits. If you're truly, you know, you think you have a problem, you really have to do it for 3 months to see the benefits.
Okay. And so at that time, were any of your friends doing it? Like, did you have many friends that weren't drinking or doing drugs?
No, because they didn't have addictive personalities like I did. You know, if I'm having one, I'm having 1,000. If I'm having one drink, I'm also getting a bag. Like, they didn't have that need to keep going and going and going. So they could stop. But I remember when I had decided that I was going to do the year off just to test the waters, I went out to lunch with one of my very best guy friends. And I said, I think I'm going to stay sober for January. And he was like, what? We've got this festival. We've got Amy's hands. Yeah. What do you mean? And I thought, holy shit. Oh my God, this is going to be a really big deal.
Yeah, I want to talk about the friendship stuff because I'm interested in how your friends reacted and how your friendships maybe changed during that period. Were you able to maintain the friendships with those people that you were used to just partying with?
No. Not the people I was used to partying with. My best and dearest friends, especially from childhood, I'm still best friends with them today, which I'm so lucky. But all of those people you pick up through your 20s, and these are people who I was like, oh, you'll be my bridesmaid one day. Like, no, they just drop away. And it's not because you dislike each other. There's just no common ground anymore. You know, if you're only seeing them at the pub or at trivia nights and you're no longer going to those things, they just kind of drift apart. I will always have love for those people, but I can say, and it might put people off sobriety, which I hope it doesn't, but you lose so many acquaintances.
Okay, so you're saying maybe they weren't necessarily friends.
Correct. I think they're great people, but I think it was just the alcohol that we loved together.
And what was the reaction from the friends? Like, you mentioned one of your mates being like, oh, you've got so much stuff to do. Like, this is a horrible time to be giving up booze or be giving up drugs. But was there a lot of that? Did you have people saying, oh, you're not that bad?
Yeah. And Dave, you know what's so funny? Everyone who I think has alcohol problems, they were the people that were like, you're not that bad, but you don't drink on Mondays or Tuesdays, so you're not that bad. When I told my partner and my housemate who I was living with that I wanted to go sober, they were sighing with relief. So I think that speaks volumes.
Wow. Do you think there is a big issue, Julia, with young women in particular and alcohol, drug addiction that we're not talking about in Australia?
Totally. I think drinking is so fashionable. I mean, we choose Instagram pics based off like if our Aperol spritz matches the background and if we're holding a champagne glass. I also think we will do anything but give up alcohol. And I don't know if there's even more stigma around women not being able to control their drinking. When you think of an alcoholic, you rarely think of it being a woman.
Yeah, is that part of the problem as well, how we perceive someone with an alcohol problem? Like, you know, there's this very accepted image of someone with slurred speech who's stumbling around, carrying a bottle of booze. I don't know. Is that part of the issue that we can't see ourselves in addiction?
Definitely. I know it was a hurdle for me of getting help because I thought, well, damn, like all I do is go out clubbing and have long lunches and go to the pub. I can't be an addict. Like, I think on social media, we're shown all these war stories. It's the extreme of alcohol addiction. So majority of us actually sit in that messy middle part, which I call the gray. And when you're living in the gray, you can move your whole life living in the gray, which means your life isn't technically falling apart. You know, you haven't burnt the kitchen down, but you know, you're not really excelling at life. You're just staying stagnant. You hate your job. Your friends are okay. You're just staying in that messy middle. And I think that is so underrepresented on social media and on media in general. A lot of us don't seek out help because we don't think we're bad enough to seek out help.
How do you know if you're addicted?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is if the thought of socializing without alcohol is so frightening to you. If you cannot imagine meeting strangers without alcohol, that to me is normally a huge red flag. If all of your catch-ups or your socializing once again is based around drinks, even if it is the pub trivia night, it's still at the pub. You think going on a walking date when you're meeting someone is lame and you just want to get to drinks? That would probably raise an eyebrow for me.
So how hard was it when you gave up to all of a sudden have to reinvent your social practices and how you would meet people or just hang out with them? Because so much of our socializing is based around bars, pubs, drinking in general. Do you remember it being really hard?
It was so tough. I was also so embarrassed. I was now introducing people to this whole different version of me. You know, I wasn't the one that was steaming in on a two-day bender anymore. I was sort of like standing by the snacks and, you know, just hoping someone talks to me. That is crazy to me. So it was incredibly tough. You really do have to say no to a lot of social events. I know that everyone wants to just keep their same life, but you can't. You know, there's that saying like your new life will cost you your old one. It is so true. So I said no to all social events, I think for the first 3 to 6 months. It was tough. There are a few pointers I can give you if you want to socialize.
Yeah, what are they?
Always hold something in your hand. That was for me because it made me feel a lot more normal. So always have a non-alc drink in your hand. I don't care what it is, any sort of non-alc drink. Eat all of the sugar you need to. When you quit alcohol...
Dietitians listening are like, please don't.
I mean, it's
don't.
Just the lesser of the evil for now. We can tackle the sugar later. It's the lesser of the evil. Say no to what you have to. And you have to either find your community or find with your partner, confide in them that you are trying to stop alcohol, or a best friend. You have to check in with someone every single day.
Do you have any advice for people in how they can come to terms with that truth about themselves, that they might be, you're saying, an addict, with someone living with an addiction? How do you mentally process that?
I would say just come at it from curiosity. Don't be too harsh on yourself. There's one thing with addicts, we know we're a piece of shit. We think that about ourselves every single day. We hate ourselves more than anyone hates us. So there's no point saying, oh my God, of course you're an addict, because that's just going to kick you while you're down. Come at it from curiosity. Can I go tonight without alcohol? How would my relationship improve if I put down alcohol? And if there are more positives on the giving up alcohol, then maybe see, do the 90 days and let's just see. There's no pressure.
You made headlines earlier this year, Julia, when you kind of called out influencers and creators, some of them, for glamorizing addiction, especially, you know, party girls. Can you explain that? Like, what's your thought process there? Why do you think that's the case?
I guess after Brat Summer, I was just seeing a lot of content online. Girls were drinking every single day, smoking in the gutter, bed rotting was on the rise. I knew that these girls made money off that type of content. And I think glamorizing addiction, which is what it was, drinking every day and having a dependency on alcohol when it came to socializing, I just wanted to speak up for the people who, if they got themselves into that situation and they followed these party girls who make so much money off that content, they might not have the access to resources that they do. You know, they might be draining their bank accounts while these party girls, they were able to afford it all. They could drink every day and get paid from it.
There was a little bit of a backlash to your comments earlier this year, and there were obviously some creators, but other people just saying, look, just because I want to party doesn't mean I have a problem.
I mean, I think that's true. I don't think everyone's addicted. It's more so questioning our relationship with alcohol. Yes, you might not have an addiction, but yeah, like I was saying before, can you socialize without it? It's just asking those questions.
So you're not saying everyone needs to give up alcohol and alcohol needs to be banned. That's not what you're calling for here.
No, if I wasn't addicted, like if I didn't suffer with addiction, I wouldn't be sober today.
Do you think we talk enough about the link between alcohol and mental health? Because I saw this stat that really was just so incredibly confronting for me. And it was that in the 24-hour period following alcohol consumption, we're 7 times more likely to act on suicidal thoughts.
Wow, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Do you feel like that there is enough of a conversation linking, you know, poor mental health with alcohol consumption?
No way. I think it is always the elephant in the room, alcohol, and we will do whatever it takes to not tackle it. And we're talking about domestic violence. We're not talking about the spike in drinking and drug taking that also happens.
Does Australia have a drinking problem?
1,000%. Our identity is tied to drinking.
How are you doing now, Julia? It sounds like things are amazing. Life's going really well. Obviously, the podcast. Are you happy with where you've landed?
I just feel like I've finally found my purpose, and to be able to work towards that every day is so fulfilling. Of course, I still have my days. Of course, there are still things, you know, I still suffer with financial illiteracy. And that's something that you do. If you're an addict for most of your life, you don't know how to do any of that. So of course, there are things where I'm really stressed about all the time. But oh my gosh, I could not imagine being hungover. Life is so boring in the best type of way. Like there's no drama, there's no fights, there's no pettiness. It's just so straightforward. And it's so easy to achieve whatever you want to achieve once substances aren't in the mix.
Really good advice. Thank you so much for speaking with us, Julia Rangiheowea from Soberly Speaking. Appreciate you coming on Hack.
Thank you so much.
Summer Hack on Triple J.
Yeah, really interesting chat, that one. And we got a response from people. I remember when we first played that interview on Hack on the radio and on the podcast, a lot of people just saying, yeah, I feel like this has been my life. I've struggled to break free of alcohol because I feel like I don't have the support around me, especially with my friends, which is a shame to hear that people can still feel a lot of judgment about giving up alcohol. We know a lot of you are interested in our relationship with alcohol, the trends. So we're going to keep bringing you stories like this. And if you did enjoy this chat, go and check out Julia's podcast. It's called Soberly Speaking, and she does interview a lot of Australians about addiction, not just with alcohol, drugs as well, and other stuff too. But for now, that is all we've got time for on the Summer Hack Pod. I'll catch you next time.